This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
I'm sick with this, I'm sick with this. Since you wasn't the bottom, blood judgment. My own sweet down to the ditch, whatever. I don't recognize you for this anymore. I don't wanna be defeated.
What's up? Welcome back to another episode of the show, of the podcast, Lead Singer Syndrome. I am your host, as always, Shane Told, as I take you into the lives of other lead singers with backstage conversations. Right now, I am in Los Angeles, California, living the dream, man. I love California. I love LA. We had an amazing show last night in Anaheim. We sold out the Anaheim House of Blues. Much love to everybody who was at the show or just anybody that supported us in Southern California over the years. It was incredible. And what was really cool as well was the House of Blues actually made us these skateboards that say the date of the show and have the robot guy on it and say sold out. So that was a really nice gesture of the House of Blues to do that for us as well. So very, very excited right now, in a great mood, beautiful weather. And I got to say, man, only disappointment is being here in California and looking at how much money we've raised for the California wildfires, which I know they've put them out. That doesn't make people's houses come back. That doesn't make people's places of work come back or their cars come back or any of that stuff. There are still people struggling. So please donate to CalFund.org. There are perks. Send an email with your proof of donation of $25 or more to sinners4good@gmail.com. sinners4good@gmail.com. And we're going to roll out some stuff. But right now, I wanted to raise $5,000, and we're just over the $1,000 mark. So a little bit disappointed, but, you know, I understand money can be tight. But, hey, still something I really feel passionate about. So please check it out again, calfund.org. Which brings me to the next piece of news. This week's guest, also from California, Mr. Cove Reber, formerly of Seosin, currently of Dead American. And what a story. I mean, this, I called him up. I thought we were going to talk for the standard 35, 45, 50 minutes, maybe. We were on the phone for an hour and a half. That's why this is a two-part episode. We go real deep. We go real deep into his childhood, getting into the band, what happened that he left Seosin or was forced out of Seosin, however you look at it, and what he's doing now. Very, very interesting stuff. A great guy. And I want to thank Cove so much for taking so much time to speak with me so you guys could hear this. So I'm going to roll this out now. Part two will be up shortly. I'm not sure if it's going to be up next Tuesday or if I'm going to put it up over next weekend. Keep an ear to the ground. Check it out, because part one is action-packed and part two is even more action-packed. Before we get into that, as always, I want to remind you, you can always get in touch with me. I check my email religiously. It is leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. I try to get back to everyone. And also, of course, we're on social media. So hit us up on Instagram or Twitter or Facebook, actually. Facebook always has some nice things going on as well. I want to remind you guys, we do have the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club, which is the best way to support this show, to support this program. Keep it free and keep it coming at you week after week. We got bonus episodes. I've done bonus episodes with members of Miss May I, August Burns Red, Beartooth, as well as so many industry insiders, people from Hopeless Records, music managers, photographers. We've got a pretty cool episode with Jared Alonji coming out pretty soon. If you want this, if one episode a week is not enough for you, check it out. Head over to leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. For as little as $6 a month, you get access to all the stuff I mentioned and a whole lot more, including question and answer sessions with me. I play some tunes. I do some cover songs once in a while. And a great community of other fans of the show, like-minded people. We're doing meetups all over the country, everywhere. Saw a bunch of people yesterday in LA. Saw a bunch of people in Florida. Saw a bunch of people in New York, New Jersey. It just keeps coming. So yes, check it out again for as little as $6 a month. leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. All right, well, I'm going to keep it short this week. We got a lot of stuff to cover. Here it is, my conversation with Cove, formerly of Saleson.
You can't tell me it's so.
Buddy,
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm fantastic, fantastic.
I'm
just on tour, doing a thing.
And, hell yeah! Where are you at right now?
Philadelphia.
Ooh, Philly. So you guys playing? What is that? What is out there? The Trock.
We just
Electric
played,
Theater. What is that?
Yeah, I think you're talking about Electric Factory. We played at the Fillmore last night, which was a new venue.
Ooh,
like a couple years old. It's really nice. It's like a 2,500 cap. It's just beautiful. It's one of the best venues I think in the country.
That's fucking awesome.
So yeah, it's great, man. It's great, man. So hey,
that is sick.
Thank you so much for doing this. I've wanted to have you on the show for a while, and you wouldn't believe, dude, how many people have requested you as a guest. Tons and tons and tons. You have a lot of really big fans that listen to this podcast.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I didn't know I still had fans.
Oh, you definitely still have fans. I'm glad we're laughing about it. You know, in fact, one of the members of the All Access Club named their daughter Kovalin after you.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome.
Kovalin, yeah.
I feel like I might have gotten an Instagram name or an Instagram message about that.
Yeah,
I don't know. There's been a few random posts that I've seen come across my feed where I'm like, oh, and then their kid Cove, that's dope, or Kovalin, or something, some rendition, I guess, of my name.
Absolutely,
and it's hard to stay out of trouble with a name like Cove, bro.
Really?
Yeah, dude, it's like there's only one of us.
One of us. That's funny.
Yeah, dude.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess having, like, I mean, my name is not common, but it's conventional. It's a name people have heard before. Cove is not a conventional name, so was growing up with a name like that tough? Is it still tough?
It's definitely not as tough anymore. Just because, obviously, life experience, but growing up, for sure, man. Yeah. I grew up in this, like, really small town in the middle of the high desert here in California. It's like there's a Navy base out in the middle of nowhere that they basically just, like, test missiles and like, airplanes and shit all day. And in that small town, I'm the only kid named Co, so, you know. my dad was like selling computers to the military. He was like a part of our church, like heavily connected into our church, and was also on the school board. So anytime, like, you know, I got in trouble, it was like, you know, there's only one of me in the town. And in all likelihood, if it gets back to me, all my friends are going down too. So, you know, it was definitely harder as a kid to stay out of trouble.
Absolutely.
Than it is now.
Absolutely. So you're talking about your dad, you talk about California. Let's start at the beginning. I love to do that. I think everyone's got a unique story, and you definitely do. Talk to me about the early days, you know, of your life there in California. What you know it was like with your family structure, and what kind of role music played a part, you know, in the early years.
Oh man. Oh, where to begin on this question? No, so basically all I remember from growing up is California. Like, I was born in Provo, Utah. I was a BYU baby. I grew up in an LDS family.
Yeah.
And the bubble that like people talk within the LDS community that there's like this bubble over Utah and all of the, you know, there's like the big, they call it the Mormon bubble.
Yeah.
Well, the town that I grew up in, there was a, you know, there was definitely a bubble too because of how small it was. But you know, I grew up I grew up with the dopest family ever, man. Like,
cool. Awesome.
All of my, you know, my parents are still together. Both my sisters and I, you know, we all still love one another. And, you know, cause that's what we were taught when we were growing up. And I think if it wasn't for the morals and the values that were instilled in me, you know, through my family, I wouldn't have become, you know, the man that I am today. But I grew up growing up in the church. You know, there's a lot of like, there's a lot of, you know, singing and choir and, you know, whether that's like youth choir or whatever. So I grew up with my aunt basically as my youth choir teacher. So it was kind of dope. I was like one of the younger kids that was in choir. Like I hated the fact that my sister was super down to do plays,
right,
and stuff in the community, because I just never had the guts to like get up on a stage in front of so many people, you know, and have like my own line to sing or my own song to sing in a play or something like that. But my sister, she always had the guts to like get up and do that. You know, and so me singing in choir in our church choir, in our youth church choir, that was like my way of you know, feeling comfortable. I'm like, well, I can't suck because there's all these other kids around me that are singing too,
right?
And we
definitely
don't suck. So
funny. So you, yeah. Sounds like you were a little bit of an introverted kid then. You know, you weren't a super outgoing attention seeker.
I mean, I'm still that kid, dude.
Yeah.
I'm still like an introverted person, you know, like even to this day, people will be like, yo, we're going out to do this. And I'm like, I'm going to stay here. I'm okay. I don't need to go out and do that. Like I'll play video games at home or, you know, whatever. I don't need to go out.
Right.
But yeah, I'm still kind of an introverted dude. Like I can talk. But at the same time, like, you know, I don't think people would really believe me if I said that by saying that, you know, like being a front man of a band and,
sure,
you know, touring and after every show going out and talking to everybody and, you know, being a part of the crowd and getting used to the crowd like that. Like, I don't think people would necessarily believe that I'm pretty introverted, but.
Well, I mean, knowing you a little bit, you know, it's funny that Seosin and Silverstein never actually did a proper tour together. It's really weird that never happened. All those years we were kind of, you know, walking this in the same circles. But, you know, I from knowing you, I kind of know you to be a little bit that way, though. A little more laid back, whereas the Seosin band was always very, like, type A personality, very intense. You always were the more laid back side of it. At least that's the general vibe that I got.
I think that's the general vibe that anybody who knew that band before I got into the band viewed it as. Like, I was told by numerous friends of theirs, like, ever since you've been in the band, they've mellowed out, like,
oh, that's cool,
a lot, you know. I was like, really? Because it still feels like they're freaking crazy. but yeah, man, like, that's just, I don't know, my dad's pretty mellow, you know. Him and I have the same type of personality, you know. He's definitely got different traits than I do, but at the same time, like, he's just a laid back guy, and you know, me being the oldest and the only son in the family, it's like I just kind of take after my dad.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Being laid back.
So, what about music? How is so you got into the choir stuff with your church, but when was it like, all right, I want to sing some rock and roll? When did that start happening?
So before I moved, to San Diego, well, North County, San Diego, in 1999. And I think the Christmas before we moved, my parents got me one of those, Paul McCartney violin looking basses.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
The yeah, Hoffman. Bro. The yeah, bass. Dude, they got me one of those. And, you know, I kind of, like, messed around with it before I moved to San Diego. And then when we moved, I was 14. And I was going, it was, like, 2 months into my eighth grade year.
That's a tough age to move.
Oh, dude, it sucked. It was the worst. I got, like, crazy depressed. Wouldn't come out of my room. I was in traditional school, so... Or traditional, like, not year-round school. We just did, like, you know, September to June.
Yeah.
To, like, end of June, and then we had the whole summer off.
Yep.
But when I moved down to San Diego, they were in year-round, so they were on block schedules. So you were, like, 2 months on, 1 month off. And were in eighth... Yeah, bro, it was super weird. So if you went... There was three track systems that they had, and they were all different colors. And the track that I was supposed to jump into was full. And the other two tracks, basically, like, the kids that I knew from church, nobody was on one of the tracks. So, or one of the other, like, you know, year round periods. So they moved me onto a track that was basically like 4 months ahead of where I was at. So I only had like 5 or 6 months of eighth grade, which was tight, but it put me behind.
Yeah.
So basically it put me behind in my schooling. So basically going into high school, like I was like a seventh grader going into high school. You know, I feel like I skipped eighth grade.
Yeah.
Which was tight at the time. Cause you know, I had all this time off, but at the same time I was like so far behind in my schooling that music kind of became my life at that point. And
what
I just picked
exactly?
up that
you just you
well
just...
you know so when I left let me back this up. So when I left Ridgecrest, that's the town that I grew up in, Blink-182 had put out Enema of the State around that time. And every kid in my town was like the biggest Blink-182 fan because Mark Hoppus had apparently like gone to that high school that I had gone to, or I was supposed to go to. So when I moved to San Diego, I was like, oh, I'm kind of following in this Mark Hoppus, like, like, you know, his footsteps or
sure,
whatever.
Sure.
So I picked up the bass when I moved to San Diego.
Ah, right.
And a couple of my friends that I had made that were a little bit older than me, they had been in bands, and their older brothers had been in bands. And my friend Jordan, he took me under his wing and was like, you know, you need to do music. You need to do music. So I would always go with him to his band practices. And I ended up meeting his, like, the singer slash bass player of his band. He had a little brother. His name's Joey. And I ended up meeting Joey going into my sophomore year of high school. Joey was going into his freshman year. And we started a little band called Mormon in the Middle, a little high school band. And it was super fun, man. It, like, pop punk to the max, bro. Yellow card minus the violin. That's basically what we were going for. But yeah, I just got, like, super involved in music, and music kind of just took over my life since, you know, I was, like, failing all of my classes. I didn't care. My school was a joke. And yeah, I just kind of, like, dove head over heels into making music, listening to music, you know, seeking out local San Diego bands or Southern California bands who were doing stuff or about getting ready to pop off. Like I remember one of the bands that we all got into was Rufio.
Yeah.
And I remember finding Rufio because we were like searching what was that? LimeWire?
Yeah.
Something. We were like downloading illegal music, and they had posted one of their songs with the yellow, like, as though it was Yellow Card.
Yeah.
We were like, who is this band? It's not Yellow Card. And then come to find out it was Rufio. But yeah, man, I just got, like, really heavy into music once I moved down into San Diego. And, you know, the rest is kind of history as far as that's concerned.
Absolutely. A little side note about Rufio. Rufio, I remember as being, they were the MP3.com band.
Yes.
Do you remember MP3.com?
Hell yeah, dude.
And it was...
I found so many good bands off of MP3.com.
There was a lot of really good bands. And it was weird because, you know, back then, there was, like, Napster and stuff and LimeWire and, you know, all those different websites. But they were always really sketchy. And it wasn't like today where you find, like, a torrent file or something and, like, you can get a record in, like, 5 minutes or less.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, I want this record. I'm going to have to leave my computer on all day, come home from school,
yes,
and then hopefully it's done downloading. It didn't mess up, and hopefully it's actually what I thought it was. So a lot of people, including myself, got fed up with Napster and all that you know, illegal downloading, because it was so sketchy. And I was like, well, I'm just going to go to mp3.com. No, they don't have, like, a bunch of bands that I've heard of, but I'm going to discover all these new bands. And
yep,
for some reason, Rufio was, like, always at the top of the charts on there. And then
they
became a legitimate, you know, real band, you know, and they put out a lot of great records. Like, Perhaps I Suppose is still... It's funny. Perhaps I Suppose, the first song is called Above Me.
Yep.
Every time I plug in my phone into, like, a random car or whatever, that song always starts playing because it's the first song, like, alphabetically. And it has this little fade in with this, like, like this, you know what I'm talking about?
This is so above me.
Exactly.
Hell yeah, bro.
So
Cucamonga, what up?
There you go. And I have heard that song more times than probably any song ever. Even, like, just the other day, I was in a rental car and I plug in my phone and it fades in all funny too. So I'm always like, what's going on? Oh, it's fading. It's that song again.
that's a great ass song, man. I love Rufio. Yeah. I love Rufio so much.
Great.
So many good memories with that band and doing fun stuff, like going out to the river and having my friends, you know, we're all wakeboarding and hitting the towables and stuff and just playing that record, like, as loud as we can over the speakers.
I know, man. Absolutely.
Such a good record.
I should try to get Scott on the show. He's still making
hell
music.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
I ran into him, like, a few years back and, like, just completely dorked out. Was like, oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. you're the dude from Rubio.
I know. I actually kind of did that too, because we were on Warped Tour together, and like they were playing some shows. This is like maybe 2004. This is like pretty early on. It was 2004, mm-hmm. I think. Yeah, and he was just like, it was like around bus call, so most like a lot of buses had pulled away, and everyone was kind of wrapping it up. But he was sitting outside his bus door, which is like not typically a place people sit, because it's like,
yeah,
it's loud over there beside the side of the bus. Usually people mm-hmm. sit in front of the bus or behind the bus. So he was sitting by the side, and he looked like really, really bummed out. And I just was like, oh, I had been drinking. And I was like, oh, this is my opportunity to just say hi to this guy. And I was like, oh, hey, man, you're Scott, right? And he says, yeah. I said, oh, I really like your band. He goes, my band won't drink with me because they're all Christians. That's what he said to me.
Oh God!
And I was like, okay, I don't think you want to talk right now. And yeah, or something along those lines. I don't know if it was exactly what he said, but
yeah.
But
what a bummer! I didn't know that.
I don't know. I didn't know that either. But anyways, man, so you're 14 years old, you're really getting into Blink-182, you're playing in a band called Mormon in the Middle. So take me through kind of the years, that, like through I guess high school, leading up to when you're about 20, 21, when, you know, when you're auditioning for Saleson.
So high school. So high school we played, there was a lot of... My group of friends were all heavily into music. Like, that's just, you know, where I gravitated towards, you know, playing Battle of the Bands, trying to play, like, you know, Soma Side Stage down here in San Diego, yeah, yeah. Trying to play, like, any of, and, you know, and even I had friends that were, like, super young that were trying to get into the promoters business, too. So we knew a bunch of people locally that could help us like keep playing, you know. I feel like we played like every other weekend when I was once we had enough songs to go out and play, because of how many bands that we knew from yeah. from both the high schools that were in Vista. So that basically was my life from sophomore year to my senior year. And my senior year of high school was when, I think it was like 2000, I want to say it was like end of 2003. I think Saleson put out Translating the Name.
Yeah.
And one of my buddies who I call him my cousin. He's not really my cousin, but just lifelong friends due to my parents, you know,
sure.
being next door neighbors in college. We had our first birthdays together, that type of cousin, you know.
Yep.
His name's Tyson, and Tyson hit me up because, you know, he played in bands in Seattle and was doing the same style of music, basically doing everything I was doing down here, but just up in Seattle. And he hit me up and was like, yo, man, have you heard this band Saleson? They're freaking sweet. And I was like, no, I'm gonna go check them out. That's a dope name. So I went and checked out Saleson, and I found out that they were from Orange County. And so Saleson was just starting to pop off, and they had a couple shows announced. And hold on, got a burp. Can't burp.
You're
anyways,
good. You're good.
So Saleson was playing some shows down locally, and one of the shows they were playing was at this church that one of my one of my friends was promoting the show. And I was like, okay, I gotta go to this show. Turns out my parents had, you know, some other their date night or whatever, so I had to watch my sisters. And
okay,
and one of my So yeah, they didn't get home till late, and I ended up missing the show, and I was like so frustrated. But one of my homies filmed the show, and And I saw them, you know, I obviously watched the video like 100 times and was like, wow, this is the craziest band and the craziest show. I'm so pissed that I missed it and I have to see them live. So they had booked this tour with My Chemical Romance and Story of the Year. I think it was like Story of the Year headlining. My Chem was playing main support and then Seosin was going to open the show.
Yeah.
And I bought my tickets. Didn't really care for My Chem at the time. And I thought, like, at the time too, I was like, Story of the Year is just another like used ripoff band.
Right.
Because, you know, just me being in high school and being dumb and not really like actually listening and paying attention.
No, I know, but I know what you mean though, because it was like John Feldman produced these bands and they were like put out on major labels and it was sort of like the major labels were just trying to make another used. That is really how it did feel with Story of the Year at first. You're right.
It was so sad.
Yeah.
It was so sad. But so I had these tickets and I was super stoked to go to the show. And they didn't really put out any information about as to why they canceled the tour.
Okay.
And so I found out that Seosin wasn't going to be playing the show, and I was like, screw it. I'm just going to call it a loss and just sell my tickets because that's who I wanted to go see, you know? So I got rid of my tickets, didn't end up going to the show. I think I gave my tickets to a buddy of mine. Didn't end up going to the show, so I'm sitting in my class, and I had become a huge Seosin fan, and I think this is like beginning of 2004. I'm sitting in my English class, my senior year, and I had the same teacher my junior and senior year for English, and her first year teaching high schoolers was my junior year, and she basically had come from strictly teaching kindergartners. She went from teaching kindergartners to teaching high school juniors and seniors.
All right.
So my junior year, we found that out, and we basically took like full advantage of this lady. And
oh, no.
It was awesome. So she would read to us like we were kindergartners. And
oh, no.
Yeah, she's sitting up at the front of the class reading us Macbeth, and like kids are just falling asleep on their desk, and like I think I had like headphones in one class. Like my senior year, it got to the point where we were all bringing pillows to the class, and like we would literally lay down underneath our, like half the class would lay down underneath their desk with their pillows and just like fall asleep to her reading. It was classic. So I'm sitting in my class and the kid next to me, trying to remember his name, he was in a band that we played with a couple of times in high school. And I was sitting there like humming a Seosin song, and he leans over to me as she's reading the book, and he goes, "Yo, man, you know the singer of the band Quit, right?" And I was like, "What?" I was like, "Anthony Quit Seosin?" He's all, "Yeah, man, like they don't have a singer anymore." So immediately, like, I raised my hand and was like, "Can I go to the bathroom?" And we parked on campus. I had like this minivan that had no back seats that I would just, if I wanted to ditch, I would just go back and lay in the back, and I had pillows and blankets, and
nice.
I would just
not bad.
Pass out. Yeah. And everybody, every senior in the school knew that my van was always unlocked, was always super comfortable. And, so I go out to my van and there's like kids hanging out inside of my van. And I'm like, bros, I gotta go home. I gotta go email this band real quick. So I ditched my class, hauled ass off the school, like out of the school. Like security guards are chasing me, trying to stop me from like exiting the school during school hours. And I'm 18, so I could have signed myself out, but I was like, screw that. I'm just gonna ditch and just, you know, floor it off out of the school. So I ended up going home that day, emailing the band and being like, what the hell? Like, you guys don't have a singer? Like, what's going on with that? And Bo
at,
the,
at this
up,
time, were you like, was it all in your head that I'm going to be the singer of this band? Or you're just as a fan, like, pissed at them?
I was just pissed. I was like, how did you guys let this go? Like, you guys made the most, you know, in my head, I'm like, you guys made the most, like, insane EP that I've ever heard in my life. Like, I've never heard anything like this, you know? So I went home and emailed him, and then Bo hit me back, like 2 days later or something like that, and was like, yeah, like, we don't have a singer right now. We're looking to find a singer, like, this and that. And so I just opened up the dialogue and was like, let me try out. Where are you guys based out of in Orange County? And he was like, oh, we're in Newport Beach. And I was like, bro, that's like an hour away. Let me come try out. And Bo was like, yeah, we've had people do that in person and it just hasn't gone over really well. So we're looking for submissions. Like, if you want to, like, try out, just send us a song, like, send us you singing one of our songs or something like that.
Right.
So immediately I was like, I'm going to get on that. I set up like a little mic in a jar connected to my dad's PC that had like Fruity Loops or whatever.
Oh,
it was
yeah,
called.
Yeah. I still use Fruity Loops. I love that program.
Yeah, dude. I remember, like, I set up this jar with like this like Radio Shack $10 microphone and was like, I'm going for it. And I had bronchitis or like strep throat or something really crazy, and I was super sick, but I was like, I gotta get this in right now. And I sat there for like an hour just playing three different songs, and I was not a guitar player, I was a bass player, and I just tried learning the songs the best I could. I think I did Mookie's Last Christmas, 7 years, and Third Measurement in C. And by the time I got to Third Measurement in C, my voice was just gone. So like half a Third Measurement in C, I just deleted and was like, I'm sorry, dudes, I have strep throat. Like, this is the best it's going to get. Like, here, take it. So I mailed a CD, like burned a CD and mailed it to Bo. And all I wrote on it was my first name and my phone number.
Yeah.
And I think this was like 2.5 months or 2 months before I ended up getting out of high school. They hit me back. They called the number, and my mom picked up the phone and she's like, hey, Cove, there's a guy named Chris on the phone from a band called Seosin. Like, I don't really know what's going on, but he wants to talk to you. And I literally remember I ran outside my front door and ran around my house twice just yelling, like, I can't believe he called me! Yes! And my mom's like, come inside and talk to this guy. And I get on the phone, and Chris is like, hey, man, was that you on the CD? And I was like, yeah, man, why? Like, why wouldn't it be? And he was like, because we thought it was Anthony playing a joke on us.
Wow.
Like, is your name really Cove? And I was like, yeah, my name's really Cove. I can't believe I'm talking to you. He's like, your demo's pretty good. Like, would you want to come up and try out on Friday? And I was like, yes, of course.
Right.
So I got, you know, at this time I was wearing like, I had like some Osiris, what do they call those shoes? Like the
I know what you're talking about.
The fatty Osiris.
Yep.
Oh, bro. I was like skate or die. But I was like one of those like famous Stars and Straps kid. I had the white belt with the stars on it and the belt buckle. And like, I had like the hat, the trucker hat at the time. I had, you know, like four pins on my trucker hat. And like, I just look like a total goofball going up to try out, but I get up to their practice and I'm just like completely shocked. Could not believe I'm standing in the presence of a band that I've never seen before.
Right.
But was for sure my favorite band of all time, you know, at that moment.
Crazy. And a band that only has an EP and it's their favorite band of all time. It's crazy, right? Mm-hmm. To think about that.
100%. It was absolutely nutty, you know, like Yellow Card up until Seosin came out was my jam, you know, like,
yeah.
Like I have so many photos of me with those dudes in Yellow Card. But when Seosin came out, I was like, this is the new sound. This is where music to me is headed. You know, right.
We're
going.
And it absolutely was.
Hell yeah.
Okay. So, you get in the band, it goes all great. You have some serious big shoes to fill, and Seosin at this point probably has more hype than any band ever. I mean, it wasn't just you in San Diego freaking out about the band in high school. There were people all over the country, all over the world freaking out about this band. Did you understand that kind of pressure that was being put on you at that time?
I don't know if I really understood the pressure. I knew there were big shoes to fill.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that they had, you know, a fan base across at least America, because my cousin in Seattle hit me up about them. So I knew they were well known, but I didn't know to what extent the band, you know, because in Southern California, like at that time, there were bands that were popping off, like Rufio had popped off, Thrice,
right, sure,
Thrice was popping off, you know, Thrice had put out Artist in the Ambulance and had signed to Island.
Yep, exactly.
I knew there was something going on in the scene that surrounded Seosin, but I didn't quite understand the shoes that I was filling until I saw the reaction of, you know, I think we did like 7 dates on Warped Tour where I sang one song. And Phil from Story of the Year, oddly enough, was singing the rest of the songs. And I didn't quite understand it until I saw the reaction from the crowd to, you know, Phil singing the songs. Like, those songs meant the same amount to me as they did to all of these kids at the Smart Punk stage on Warped Tour. And
so wait. Why was Phil singing the songs? And that's weird.
So,
isn't that weird?
It wasn't to me, because I had never been a front man. You know, I had always held a bass, you know, an acoustic guitar, or, you know, just some type of instrument in front of me. And I'd never just held the microphone in my hand. And I don't know if Phil had either, but Phil had done enough touring to where he knew, you know, I think the biggest show I had played up until that point was maybe for like 200 kids at a Battle of the Bands.
Right,
that,
of course,
you know,
of course.
Like, was just all of our friends from high school. So, it wasn't really that weird to me that Phil was singing, because it gave me stage time in the sense of, like, you know, like getting the feeling of just looking at the crowd from the stage, you know?
Right.
Which oddly enough is something that I did like 2 nights ago. I went and saw Circa out in Anaheim.
Oh yeah.
And I was like, I should probably go and at least just like stand on stage to just side stage and like look at the crowd just to kind of like observe like reactions and see how it, like, yeah, it's not me standing on stage but singing, like, it's a weird feeling, you know, like my first time singing we recorded I Can Tell, and it went on the Smart Punk volume 1 of you know, whatever mixtape that they put out. And so when I sang that song, it was so bad. Like, I remember the first time going out, I was like, I remember telling him that day, I was like, I've never held a microphone in my hands, guys, like outside of practice with you guys. Like, I've never done this. And they were like, they looked at me like, what? You've never done this? I was like, no, man, what do I do? And I remember Chris and Bo being like, just jump down into the middle in the little barricade and like just go nuts. And I was like, okay, I guess that's what I'll do. So I remember the whole time I just spent like in the crowd, basically, you know, singing I Can Tell. And it was so bad my first time. But, you know, as is expected, you know, your first time singing, like, I don't know, first time standing on a stage in front of more than just your friends and homies, like, it's kind of a big deal.
Of course. You know? And the biggest thing, too, that people don't understand, and, you know, this is the Lead Singer Syndrome podcast, is when you stand on stage and you're singing, it's unlike anything you've ever done before because you can't hear yourself. Like, like, no matter how good your monitors are, it's still way worse. It doesn't sound like you're in your shower. It doesn't sound like you're in your car.
Yes. It doesn't sound like the familiar area.
There's a loud-ass guitar lamp on either side of you and bass rumbling the whole stage and cymbals in your ears, and you can't hear anything. And it's very difficult to sing live on stage. It just is.
Yeah.
You know? And you weren't using any of your monitors yet or something like that, that can help a lot. You know, so it's if you don't have experience with that, it isn't like making your demo or singing in a little studio that you made, you know, out of your dad's PC. It's like you can't hear shit. It's just the way it is.
No, I couldn't hear anything, bro. Like, I was so out of key. I think there's a recording that's floating around somewhere of it that's just so bad.
Yeah.
I remember hearing it and being like, oh, I'm going to get kicked out of this band because I suck. But you know, it was just like a trial period. You know, they needed to see how I was going to like react to them being on tour. We did 7 shows, I think, on Warped Tour that first year, and I got to rekindle relationships with the Under Oath guys.
Yeah.
And Spencer had just joined the band, and they just put out Chasing Safety. Yeah. So I got to meet Spencer and you know, rekindle the relationships with the rest of those guys. And From First to Last was on that tour. Yeah. Yesterday's Rising was on that tour.
We actually were on a bunch of it too, just not the same days you were.
Yeah,
because we were also on one of the smart punk bands. You know, on that stage.
That was such a sick stage. That was like the drive-through. The drive-through stage when drive-through wasn't there anymore.
Yeah, no, totally. And it was cool because, you know, and I'm sure you remember it. You know, like Warped Tour before that was so punk. You know, it was like all Epitaph, Fat Records, and then this was like our own little movement. You know what I mean? And it was cool when there was like an older punk band playing on a main stage, and whatever band was on the smart punk stage had more people watching them. You know what I mean? It was like our own little revolt, you know, over there. So I really loved that experience too.
Same, man. Same. I remember one of the biggest reasons that I got into music was because of Warped Tour. My the homie Jordan that I had mentioned, who kind of pulled me under his wing and introduced me to Joey, who's playing guitar for the Used right now. He took me out to Warped Tour, and we went and we watched AFI, and Davey Havoc came flying. They were playing main stage, and he came flying out of the semi truck where all the gear is, and he hit the back of the drum riser, jumped over the drum kit and over the drummer, did a full iron cross in the air, hit his knees, like slid from, like, you know, from iron cross, he hit his knees, slid to the front of the stage and was yelling some nonsense. I don't remember what it was. Probably just, yeah!
Right,
you know?
Right.
And I remember seeing that and being like, this is what I want to do. Like, I want to make people feel that, like how I feel right now. Because that was one of the coolest things I had ever seen up until that point was Davey Havoc just losing his mind in like, this is like long black hair, probably sleeping in a coffin, you know.
Yeah, he used to have the umbrella he'd carry around everywhere. I remember.
Legit. Such a legit dude. But yeah, man, like that was basically like that, you know, that smart punk stage and those first 7 shows were like my introduction to Seosin and to the fan base, you know.
Absolutely.
After that, we did a strung out tour with I think it was Death by Stereo was on that tour, Strung Out, and this band called Last of the Famous.
Okay, I don't remember them.
But that's, yeah, they were like very punk tour. Euro band. Yeah, it was a super punk tour. And I remember, like, even in high school, what was it, American Paradox?
That's one of the records?
Yeah. So I think American Paradox had come out while I was in high school. And when Seosin was like, yeah, we've got a strung out tour, I was like, no way. Like, I have the chance to tour with some of my favorite bands. Like,
yeah, it's cool. It's such a cool feeling.
That's so dope, you know? So that was my first actual tour with Seosin where I sang all of the songs. I was the front man.
Right.
You know, all the weight was on my shoulders, right. and the shoes that I could actually feel how big the shoes were that I was filling.
Yeah.
At the time. But bringing it back around to that, it's like I had to make a, you know, I kind of made it like a decision on that tour where it was like, am I filling shoes or am I just wearing my own shoes and going to take this project and instead of like wearing used shoes, kind of like bring in my own shoes and like just accept the fact that, like, you know, this is no longer me filling in. This is my band, you
yes.
know?
Well, exactly.
So,
but I feel like that's something that maybe you wrestled with a lot, because you got in this band because you sounded exactly like Anthony Green. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? That was why they picked you. And, you know, and of course those people had only heard that EP with him singing. So you go into the live show, you're trying to emulate a certain, you know, sound. And then you go in to make the first album, and it's like that's part of the challenge, I imagine.
Yeah. It was definitely a challenge. I think because of, you know, we signed to Capitol Records. I don't even think I was 21 yet when I had, no, I wasn't 21 yet. I had just turned 20 when we signed our deal to Capitol. And, you know, I remember working on demos for the full length record and being like, you know, I don't necessarily need to emulate Anthony anymore. I just need to like showcase like who I am and my personality and write about the things that are meaningful to me, you know?
Totally.
Because at that time, you know, there was a lot of like negative, I don't want to say negativity, that I found in the music that I was listening to, but it wasn't like, there wasn't a lot of hope.
Yeah.
And that was something that to me, I was like, I feel like with heavy music, you know, the majority of the content, just because of the sonic vibes, I guess we'll call it, like, or I'll call it, it brings out a lot of negative energy. So for me going into that, I'm like, I'm a happy person. Like, I don't really have like a lot of negative things to talk about. You know, my life up until this point has been great. You know, I grew up in a family that both mom and dad were still together, and my sisters were both badasses in their own right, and you know, like, you know, love one another. Like, that was my mentality. And so when I got into the writing process, I wanted to like really showcase like that there's hope, you know, out there.
Absolutely.
for everybody, you know, and that's hence, you know, you're not alone, and voices and all those songs off of that first record had a lot of hope in it.
And it's a beautiful record, and it was a beautiful, you know, time. I mean, absolutely. But, you know, and going back to what I said earlier about my interpretation of Seosin being the guys in the band being very, very type A, serious, intense personalities, and you being more of a laid back kind of guy, there must have been personality clashes. And not only that, but just the age difference. You know, I mean, nowadays, what, you're like 33, Bo's maybe like 37, 38. They're around that age. So that isn't as big a deal. But when you're talking about the difference between somebody that's an 18-year-old out of high school and somebody that's like
23, 24.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, and you're like in sort of like you're now in like steering the ship of their future. I mean, there must have been so much micromanaging going on, being like, no, do this, don't do this, you know, I mean, were they really hard on you?
Yeah.
A delayed response. I think that's
the shortest. That's the shortest answer you're gonna hear from me, right? Out of this whole interview. Yeah. I mean, I'm the oldest in my family. You know, right. So for me, like when I joined, it was like I gained four older brothers who had all this just depth of knowledge and in music, and like they introduced me to like so many bands that you know my group of friends we didn't listen to, but you know they had all this knowledge, you know.
Yeah,
and
totally.
For me to kind of like accept that, like they were, since they were older, they were going to steer the ship, you know, like they had their, you know, they had more, how do I put this? Like they had more knowledge as to what it is that we were, you know, going to accomplish than even I did.
Yeah.
At the time. So, you know, there was a lot of things that happened during the making of the first record that, you know, I'll just kind of leave out, but you know, there was a lot of arguments. There was a lot of fighting, a lot of, you know, I don't like this, I don't like that, you know, people arguing, you know, about like just the nitty gritty.
Right.
They're nitpicking everything, bro.
Yeah.
So it got to the point where it was, you know, I kind of felt a little bit of, I don't know, I want to say failure, but that's just the only word that comes to mind right now, where it was like, man, can I even do this, you know? And once Howard Benson came into the picture with the record, that guy really, really did the best job refereeing
right.
the nitpicking, because, you know, he had done so many amazing records that I loved, you know, POD Satellite, like what a sick record, speaking of another San Diego band.
There you go.
And even Blindside Silence. Like I remember seeing that Pitiful video and being like, this is the next band to do something special, even though, you know, they didn't really pop off like they should have.
Yeah, you're right.
But those two bands, like, you know, every single time I saw Howard, I was like, dude, you worked with two of my favorite bands that like wrote two of my favorite records. And he was able to kind of, you know, play referee and step in when the, let's just call them verbal beatings, were happening, you know?
Well, so, I don't know. It just seemed like it was rough, but it wasn't a lot of fun for you, you know, like what you had to go through. And, you know, it was just like, everything's your fault if something doesn't go well.
Going through it, yeah. Going through the writing process, for sure. But once the record was done and it was out, like, I didn't feel any of that, man. Like, I didn't, like, all those thoughts literally just got, like, pushed to the wayside. And it was just game time. It was like, you know, we have to do this perfectly from here on out, you know? And I think with the amount of touring that we did off of the first record, you know, I think the Used put out two records and we only had one out in that amount of time, you know,
right, like
we toured for 2.5 years, bro.
Yeah.
Off of that first record. So it was kind of like unheard of what we were doing. We did two or three world tours and like countless American tours. So there were no more shoes for me to fill.
Yeah.
This was my band. These were my shoes. You know,
yeah,
anybody, anybody who second guesses that is like dumb, in my opinion.
So there it is, the first half of my conversation with Cove. So yes, keep your ear to the ground for when part two is going to drop. I know I left you hanging here, but hey, you know what? Make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss it. That's how I get you. If you're out of podcasts to listen to, definitely check out the All Access Club. Again, the link, leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. And once again, I want to thank everybody in California for the love and support of Silverstein for now 15 years. It is truly amazing. We've sold out all of our California shows, which is awesome. Although we are coming back to San Diego in January, so check that out. Tickets are on sale for our show at House of Blues. I'll leave you with a tune. Here is a Seosin classic, Voices, on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. I will see you next time.